Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The Odd Angry Shot, a Vietnam-Australian movie about Vietnam War. And I was just seeing the 40th anniversary screening of it. And it was just a very intense one. One of the original actors and the director and a film critic was there afterwards dissecting it. And it was just it was full, 450-seat cinema full of old people, old Vietnam War veterans. And so it's just the movie, an assembled movie of an assembled book written by someone who was a cook in the SAS in Vietnam. And it was about, so this is the Special Air Service, I suppose the elite people. And it was just, you know, I could, like, it was sort of a bit creepy in that of the sort of authenticity, the sort of the quietness. Like, it's hard to imagine Australia was a bit of a backwater, well, still is a bit of a backwater, a very quiet sort of backwater. And there's very much a sort of an Australian way of doing things, or Australian way of coping with things. And so a lot of the not monologues, or the, just the things that were said were very, very true. That there's this idea that people who actually sort of get their hands dirty doing work or going off to war are the poor people, whereas the richer people hang around waiting for commissions. There's sort of a class war thing. And so I just myself very much am very sensitive to that class war. It's not so much like the working class. I just think the upper class values are so toxic. You know, at the end of the day, you can't really trust these people from the upper class. That's my view. Now, the actual film itself, so I've got a limited time while I walk, I drive home to my family and stuff like that. But looking at it, it didn't seem, you know, incredibly rich Vietnam. And it looked a bit Australian. In fact, it was filmed in Australia at Canungra, the land warfare place. So I did a lot of training, or one set of training up there at the School of Land Warfare. So it's very, very tough conditions. So in terms of just absolutely putting yourself on edge, it's actually filmed in an army training area. And so it's not that I could recognize sort of the shape of trees and things, like, you know, just the general density of vegetation. I couldn't recognize it there. But in terms of putting yourself on edge, and you can sort of definitely feel, you got your heart fixed up, because there's nothing worse for, spending 40 minutes carefully going up a hill and then just getting blasted away. Even though it's there's something about that crack, and you're there, and often you call back, the contact front to enemy, something like that, but sort of scout dead, contact front, scout dead, and that was exactly what happened in the movie. There was a story afterwards about the this person wounded, hit by mines, you know, just screaming, 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 and the advisor just had to get out. And the reason was it's so realistic there. And of course, you see the small things like on the webbing, the little first aid patch, first aid thing with the plastic for the sucking chest wound. So if you get shot, one of the things to do is you're punctured, your peritoneal cavity is covered, and so you have to get a piece of plastic and seal up the wound. This is one of the things you do. So that's just so it was a fairly intense thing. They had an engagement where the Australians threw a White Fos grenade, and you can sort of see that it's a cinematographic thing. I suppose they would have. That's one of the things I'm just so sensitized to. So they're often, with the you see the Israelis firing White Fos into places. This is white phosphorus, form of form of phosphorus burns extremely brightly and fiercely, and it's actually solid oxygen, so it burns metal. You can't put it underwater. There's a whole heap of things, and there they've got this incredible infrared imagery. And the one thing you wouldn't need is white phos to mark something out. The Palestine's just probably the size of incredibly small. So there wouldn't be one point in Palestine where the Israelis haven't got everything and the need to fire a white phos. And it is interesting that they go out and they explain, here's your. They arm themselves up to go out, and then they sort of. This stupid thing where they say, well, what do you want? Or, I'll have this, and a white phos. Some white phos. And so there's no story there. There's sort of things which I suppose you'd have to be. RPG, I forgot what, which is that the Viet Cong had. What was very good about it, and it was pointed out, the cutting, in terms of that you'd be visually led along one thing, and then the soldier would be upset about losing his mother and daughter in a car accident back in Australia. And so that was introduced by saying, oh, do you know that there's greater possibility of dying in car accidents than in Vietnam? And I think that's actually true, because I was actually counting, all in all, we'd lost 23 in one battle and 27 all up. Throughout, so if you lose three in one movie, that's a fair amount of people. So they lost a few there. So that's an important thing. I suppose what I did enjoy about it is the disjointed exit. They just suddenly found out one day they're going back, and then they're just back. In there, in the way that the movie's cut, so a lot of the editing was really beautiful. So it was cut such that you saw the four marching, and then that went to two, and it could have been Vietnam. You're trying to work out where the shot's from, and they're in some place in Sydney going up for something. There's sort of this slight tension. Oh, it's just so beautifully understated. It's this slight tension, and then what are you doing now? How does the fact that the film doesn't really stitch on to any future, there's no resolution of things, is pretty much the same sort of thing. And even if you're not in active combat or anything like that, and not that I have to stress, I haven't been overseas, I've just done a lot of in the past training, and which is more like museum stuff. Me trying to get me to say the equivalent of writing, I could do a, tell you how to do a Gothic manuscript, you know, with a quill or something like that, an ink and a what's it, illuminated manuscript. Except people nowadays, well, they just hit print. You know, it's so the skill and the knowledge you had is just so far out of date. Now, of course, the actual 79 that was actually filmed before. So I was 82, 83, 84 in infantry training. So the uniforms is exactly, we didn't swap to a modern, they were still in the Vietnam War uniform, and it's of course all the equipment we had was Vietnam War. And I suppose one of the things they pointed out is that Francis Ford Coppola, pretty much a few years before, wanted to film Apocalypse Now, and he was very upset that the Australian Army wouldn't, or the Australian Air Force wouldn't provide the helicopters for his Apocalypse Now thing. But, however, the problem was that he was actually asking in his film shot more helicopters than there were in the actual Australian Air Force. I think there was only 20, and so at any one point you'd probably have 8 would be the maximum you'd ever get in any one location. And things were really small. So I think there was sort of this angst and anger. And that sort of gives you a, sort of an idea of how microscopic these things are. I think we, overall, I think we had a total of 40,000 actual people troop through there, a few thousand each, you know, 10,000 or so each year. So that's sort of like nothing. That would be the amount of, you know, the amount of Americans who would go over there by accident. You know, they're saying they'd go in the wrong queue, and oh, what am I doing over here? So it's extremely small. So look, the sheer tension and I can say as a scout, there's this sheer tension. You're looking at this bush here, and the entire thing is that there's, you know, in obviously a weekend warrior or week, you know that there's got to be so many people there, and then there's, you look at the land and you know, well, there's got to be someone in that area there, and you look and you look and you look, and it's just so crazy. And then I can remember being they rotate you from the front to the back often, you know, give you a rest. And so I was up there looking at this rocky outcrop. Oh, she was getting home now, a rocky outcrop, and it was I can remember going past it, then put in as Tail and Charlie, and then as Tail and Charlie, finally someone popped out, waited for us to go through, and popped out, and it was just awful thing. And so that's there. So it's the odd angry shot. That's probably not a very good film review. It's that very intense feeling. I don't know, there's this beer economy which I really didn't get into. You know, you'd say do that for a case, that would be do this for a case, and of course if you didn't deliver that case, you know, it was sort of like the opposite, and it's sort of like a badge of honor. That's sort of like how you could actually get someone to do something incredible, you know, like they're exhausted at the end of the day, but then get them to really go out on a limb, you do that beer. So that beer economy is still there. It's sort of very hard to understand. The really interesting thing is sort of how they had utensils like cigarette lighters and tools hanging from strings from things that everyone used, and that's a very I don't know, very common sort of thing. So that's the end of the odd angry shot. I'm the, back here, an Australian war film that very few people know about, but it was worthwhile seeing. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.